Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. A little past 3.5 minutes past the hour as we begin this Tuesday, the fourth day of April 2017 edition of The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to pick yourself out a screen name and a password. Free to anybody who wants to do so. And jump in and into the conversation where you'll be greeted by Anatole, Jug of Punch, Squeaky 41, and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. And where I presume it is a lovely day in Northern California. It was a lovely day here in almost level West by Cold Trump Virginia stand today. In the studio here, even as I speak, a balmy 79.3 degrees. Yeah, no shit. Fourth day of April, and it's air conditioner season at the Horn. Yay. We jumped right from propane season to air conditioner season with nothing. No let up. Nope. But beats the hell out of those 38 degree days in the studio really do kind of blow, so I'll take what we got here. Thanks very, very kindly. Yep. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, like I said, and we are a listener-supported operation. If you would like to be a listener who supports the operation, we highly encourage people to become monthly subscribers to the tune of about $10 a month. Whatever number you wish to put in there under the contribute tab, check that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. But $10 a month means you're paying about 6.5 cents per hour. You're not even paying. I mean, you can have it for free. We'll just go as long as we can go. But you are contributing something on the order of 6.5 cents per hour of programming over the course a year. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I don't know of any of that. There's Asa. Stop telling us how much it costs per hour to run What is that? It went away too fast. Stop telling us how much it costs per hour to run the horn, Bob. Yeah, okay. Uh-huh. If you'd like to just put in $10 or Mr. Soros, you can put in, you know, 10,000 or 100,000 or something. And we'll employ people and you can have the pride of knowing that there are little employed progressive hillbillies. And it'll all be because of you, Mr. Soros. But anyway, we try to raise $200 an evening. And sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. Last night was a don't. But thanks to Anatole, and thanks to 4 of our subscribers, instead of having $397 to raise this evening, we have $307 to raise this evening, which is a pretty big deal. That's a That's a significant amount of change, at least in horn money it is, I can tell you. So we got $307 to go. I'm not even going to try to do the math on that because I don't cipher real good at levels like that. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've got to do, either via PayPal at the Contribute tab or via the U.S. Postal Service, the address for which is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, WV-25801. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's 307. Now, a reminder, tonight is no different than last night, no different than tomorrow night and Thursday night will be. The program's only going to be a couple of hours long, two instead of three. Because I got to shut down at 8 and get ready to do 2 hours in the chair there for the Malloy program. And last night was fun. Tonight will be fun, etc. I enjoy sitting in for Malloy when called upon so to do. So we've got 2 hours to raise $307. I hope we can do that and not have some sort of ginormous damn nightmare hole in the ground to fill in as the week goes on. Okie dokie. Laborman says, let's send a petition to Scrump to donate his next quarter's presidential salary. It'd be put to better use than he could put it. Oh, by the way, this is fun. Since it's Titanic Tuesday, and we reserve Titanic Tuesday for monumental Titanic displays of intellect, then I think this qualifies. You may recall Titanic Tuesday was born way back when our buddy Jim, many, many years ago now, heard the morning monotone on terrestrial radio over in Beckley, America's fifth smallest radio market. I remember him, Jim heard him take a call from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers, asking him, Steve, how come you reckon it is there is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the beach. To which Steve replied in a monotone that is often imitated but seldom fully reproduced in its stunning abilities make people fall asleep, drive into phone poles, into ditches, walk into walls, things like that.
Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates.
Titanic plates? Yeah. Still no word on the movement of the Titanic egg separator. It takes a lot of stuff in the Titanic kitchen, of course. It was a world-class kitchen afloat upon the seas. So that's where Titanic Tuesday comes from. And we've got some Titanic examples. But hey, right here as the program begins, I got a Titanic email. Titanic Intellect, courtesy of Sean, who signs Proud Jill Stein Voter from Wisconsin. And the subject line? Now, I want you to remember, please, we have nice exchanges that don't necessarily always agree, but we try to be civil in the attempt. I try to be civil in the response when people are civil in the initial message. But when you're a dick, and we talked about that, those gender-based insults last night, but sometimes it's hard to get away from them.
You dick!
You get sent back at you what you sent out. So, subject line, fuck you, Bob, exclamation point. This comes from Sean. I'm done listening to the horn. I'm sick of you attacking Jill Stein voters. You're a neoliberal shill and a Hillary Clinton apologist, and it enrages me every time you say Unicorn Sparkle Fart Purity Brigade. Well, I don't say Unicorn Sparkle Fart Purity Brigade, Sean. I say Sparkle Fart Powered Unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade. There's a big damn difference. Listen for comprehension, Sean, and you might learn something. Russia is not our enemy. Putin is not the evil killer as described in the pro-Clinton propaganda pushed by the Democratic Party. Jill Stein is much more progressive than the Democrats. Stop red baiting and get your head out of your 400-pound ass. Signed, proud Jill Stein voter from Wisconsin. Proof that one may be stupid and proud at the same time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There it is. There's that word. Neoliberal. Somebody brought me a cold coffee. Neoliberal, sumbitch! The word actually means something, but it doesn't mean anything anymore. Because all the meaning's been sucked out of it by the likes of Sean. You know, they overcharged me at the grocery store. Goddamn neoliberals! And you know what? In a place like Wisconsin, Sean, you earn every bit of derision, my friend, that anyone cares to heap on you. I'm sorry, but it's true. Everything that's going wrong in this country need not have gone wrong save for people like you in Wisconsin and others in Michigan and others in Pennsylvania. I'm sorry. I wish it was otherwise. But it's true. Sean, you had one simple question on a very simple IQ test, and you failed. Okay? I'm sorry. I'm sorry you voted for somebody who thinks that Wi-Fi puts weevils in our brains. I'm sorry that you voted for an anti-vaxxer. I'm sorry you voted for somebody who's never even won a statewide race, never proved herself capable of doing anything more than listening to complaints about potholes on Main Street on a city council. For one term, no less. I'm sorry. But you wanna come at me with a fuck you, Bob, fuck you, Sean. With a red hot poker, buddy. Neoliberal Hillary Clinton apologist. You fucking dumbass. I sat here during the entire primary season advocating for the candidacy of who? Hillary Clinton? No. Bernie Sanders. But I'm an adult in political terms. I sublimated my desires, my pet desires, my privileged desires, as did many others, to try to prevent what's happening now from happening now. Had Jill's voters in Wisconsin had the same degree of, let's call it political adulthood, and Michigan and Pennsylvania, we wouldn't be talking right now about the looming confirmation of a Supreme Court justice who thinks that working people who drive trucks need to freeze to death in the truck to prove their loyalty to the company so as not to be fired once they're dead. Or fired in their hospital beds, or what have you. We wouldn't be talking about a Trump budget that guts Meals on Wheels. That's on you! Not the people who said, well, okay, you know, I supported Bernie. I believe in Bernie's agenda. I'm going to continue to work on Bernie's agenda. But for now, he couldn't get as many votes in the primary season as Hillary Clinton did. Therefore, Hillary Clinton is the winner. And I'm going to support the Democratic nominee. Because I sure as shit don't want Trump. On the other hand, Jilly Jill Jill well, she said Trump might be bad for America, but not as bad as Hillary. How's that working out, Jill? Well, it's working out fine for Jill, because Jill's rich. She's a trust fund baby. She's got enough money to protect her privilege. A lot of us don't. So, you know, good on you, I guess. But maybe someday you'll grow up and you'll realize that civic participation in the well-being of your country extends beyond your own privileged self-interest. Note here, I made a $100 contribution to the Horn for the absence of the Shawns of the world. Well, thank you. Thank you very kindly. Michael asks, are we sure, Michael says, are we sure Proud Sean isn't doing satire? He hit every single ridiculous cliche, including Hitlery and the cuddly, snuggly, pooty poot is our friend angle. Yes, he did. But see, I don't know. Do you start a satirical email with "fuck you, Bob"? Or maybe down at the bottom put "just kidding." Or as they would say in Pittsburgh, "just jagging you." See, that's the thing, Michael. I don't think it's satire. They talk this way.
God damn it, my grilled tempeh sandwich is burnt. Neoliberal shills.
They do. It's really kind of weird and silly. They can't go a sentence without, yeah. No, Stephen, New York. Can you send me that email, Stephen New York asks? I just want to see it. No. We're not going to start a sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade artifact collection. No, we're just not. Asa suggests perhaps you can switch out sparkle fart-powered Unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade for Green Slime Brigade. It's more whatchamacallit. Concise. Green Slime Brigade. Well, that's got potential. But it's the rich imagery that surrounds Sparkle Fart powered Unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade. You can just see them galloping across the plains, can't you? I mean, really. With their hacky sacks and I'm sorry, I'm stereotyping. But you can see them galloping across the plains and every now and then the tail of one of the unicorns lifts and you know, a sparkling rainbow comes out its ass and the unicorn races to the front of the brigade. And when they gather into formation and they get ready to attack, they all yell, "Neoliberal shills!" And then they put the spurs to the unicorns and they take off and they yell as one, "Hitlery! Goldman Sachs speeches!" Meanwhile, Larry says, Jill Stein and the Green Party are fucking lazy and have no incentive to actually put in the work in the non-presidential years to actually grow their party and make it legit. They show up once every 4 years with their lazy, childlike political ideals. And, by the way, Jill Stein is also a Pooty Poot lover. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I misunderstood Steve in New York. He's not trying to set up a collection of Jill Stein idiota. He just tuned in, that's all. He's trying to catch up. Okay. Wait a minute. Here, first one of the evening. Steve in China. Poor little things. Just when you thought you had a little privacy, there goes Sean calling you out on a 400-pound ass. Sad. That's just the ass part. I mean, you don't want to know about my nose. That's like a nose full of nickels is what that is. The Mac, are you serious about that neo-lib email? It rolled in here. It's signed. All caps. Screaming. Fuck him in the dildo he is writing. Not with yours, Mac. Not with yours. But nice start. For a Titanic Tuesday. Okay. Haley noting, weird ass Tuesday just got a little weirder. And thanks to Glenn for getting us started as well. So that's 307, 207, 197 to go to knock out in the next hour and a half or so. But, you know, I remember when Bart Cop called stuff like that monkey mail, but it was reserved for people from the right wing. Because I said a long time ago that this was going to be a safe space for conversation among progressive people.
Neoliberal shill.
Um, And it remains that there's not going to, wing nuts are not allowed on the air here. But by the same token, I have not a lot of sympathy for the what was that, Asa? Green Slime Brigade. Yeah. Michael, following up on his maybe that satire question. I'm not saying he's not being a total fucking ass. I've seen it. But could he just be trolling you? A Russian troll, perhaps? It just seemed too perfect. But I guess that's how cult members are, perfectly reciting their dogmatic talking points. Still, I'm skeptical that Sean is a real Jill Stein voter from Wisconsin and former sympathetic listener, a righty hate listener. That's another story. Either way, I'm about to make a contribution in Sean's name. Well, thank you, Michael. And in fact, our anonymous $100 contributor who said that contribution was made in the absence of Sean's has suggested that be the theme tonight. Contribute in the name of Sean, who's given up on the horn because we will not bow down and stick our noses up the fundaments of the likes of Jill Stein and her sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade. So we can do that. I think it's a lovely idea. Thank you to our anonymous helper, and thank you to Michael. That's how that's going to roll tonight. So, other Titanic Tuesday stuff. Well, we got it. We have it in, as usual, rich abundance. Tons of it. And, you know, remember, Titanic displays of intellect are not always limited to the confines of the continental or even the non-continental United States, Alaska and Hawaii, and the colonial possessions who should be offered and should have been offered either statehood or autonomy long, long ago, like the Northern Marianas Protectorate and American Samoa or Puerto Rico. Yeah. Sometimes right-wing intellect, Titanic right-wing intellect, happens in other countries. And sometimes, with a great degree of irony, it affects, you know, the sea and water. Okay? Let's go down, shall we, to the land of the banana benders. That's something Robert taught me about. The reference of that the rest of Australia makes for folks in Queensland. That's right, Queensland, Australia, where this past Wednesday, which would have been the 29th day of March, what is referred to as a water license was officially signed, granting a coal company named Adani, A-D-A-N-I, the right to ruin water, extract water, in the course and scope of creating the largest strip mine in all of Australia. Mm-hmm. How large is large? And see, this this I guess this is kind of like what we have in the United States. We call it a 404, and you get it from the Army Corps of Engineers when you want to ruin a shit ton of water in order to have a coal operation. Adani Mining Partnership Limited. Authorized activity, the taking of associated water from Betts Creek beds and adjacent formations with the point of take on or under the area of mining leases 70505, 70506, and 70441, mining leases. Authorized purpose, dewatering during the course of or resulting from the carrying out of an authorized activity for the mining leases. Conditions. This associated water license is subject to the conditions set out in Annexure A. This associated water license is given under the Water Act on this 29th day of March, 2017, signed Darren Moore, Executive Director, Central Region, Delegate of the Chief Executive, Department of Natural Resources and Mines, College of Woolloomooloo. That's not there. Seems fairly innocuous, doesn't it? I mean, God almighty, Australia's got all the water they could ever possibly need. I mean, why not waste a few gajillion liters? The water license amounts to unlimited ability by Adani Mining. Unlimited ability to get into the groundwater. And by the way, this mine is just one of nine such mines that are proposed for the Galilee Basin west of Rockhampton. I looked it up on Google Earth. Looks like it might have been a nice place once. But I guarantee goddamn double to you, it's not going to be a nice place anymore once it's got nine great big gaping open cancerous holes in the ground. The Galilee Basin. The irony is not lost on me. They get that it's a giant open pit mine to get at coal that no one in Australia needs, that's designated for export. You know, put it on boats and send it across the Great Barrier Reef, because who needs a Great Barrier Reef anyway? It's a barrier, right? It's a problem. Here's a fun little fact tucked away in the news story. Nothing that Adani Mining Partnership Limited does would trigger the mining activity having to cease. Stop. They could poison every drop of water in a 100 square kilometer area. Make it 260 square kilometer area. That way, that'd be 100 square miles. And the Australian government would do precisely nothing. Australia, feeling more as many or more effects from climate change as any other country on this planet. And they want to mine more coal. More coal that's, you know, not necessary. So Adani can do anything it wants to, and it won't and nothing will make the government slow down the mining. This, by the way, just as an aside, and I'm sorry, Robert, I'm not trying to. I hope this isn't upsetting. This proves that mandatory voting does not necessarily solve problems. It just makes people vote. It is a cautionary tale to the likes of me who say, you know what we really need to do is find that 48% of people who sat on their ass last November and get them out to the polls.
caveat, they could go and do something just as stupid as the Trumpanzees did. And the Trumpanzees did do something stupid. I saw a lovely little investigative reporting package that ran on Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper's AC360 program from down Texas way, in which they investigatively reported what happened the last time the federal government got fence fever down along the Texican border. And they reviewed all the lawsuits. This would be back during the Reign of Error, the nightmare days of the Dim Leader administration, when they got fence fever. And a ton of the lawsuits are still pending. But what happened is the federal government came in and exercised eminent domain and built their fence. In some cases, building the fence in such a way that American citizens, American families, usually with sufficient wealth to own a whole bunch of land, wound up on the Mexican side of the fence, but still in the United States, with no ability except for one sorry, solitary, locked gate to get through the fence. In one instance, in the CNN report, the Trumpanzee family talked about how, and it was a sad story, talked about how, I guess their livestock barn or shed or whatever caught fire. And the fire department came roaring down, but couldn't figure out a way to get through the fence because nobody'd opened the gate for them and they couldn't open the gate themselves. And so the Trumpanzee lady talked about how pathetic it was to watch her pet miniature goat run around on fire. And the other loved family animals that burned up in the barn. And you sit there and that's just, oh, that's sad and sick and sorry. Truly, not being sarcastic. It was awful. And so the wall will have to go where the fence is. You know, the big, beautiful wall that all the Trumpanzees just clapped and yelled and cheered, and some of them spontaneously defecated into their hands and just flung poo because that's what Trumpanzees do. Right. And to a person, they all lost their cases to the eminent domain because the government displayed, proved a sufficient national interest of we the people looking to form that more perfect union and achieve domestic tranquility to build a big-ass fence across southern, whatever you want to call it, Texas, to keep out the Mexicans. Ah? And the best part of it was the one Trumpanzee lady who lives in a gated golf course that's due to have a wall blow right through it, and she said, "Well, yes, I voted for Trump, but you hate to talk about such a thing, but I'd hire me a lawyer to stop it." See, she's all for the big, beautiful wall as long as it's on somebody else's property. This is the Trumpanzee version of NIMBY, not in my backyard. But she'd vote for Trump all over again, you know, because of those people. And, well, lady, shut the fuck up. This is how they're making America great again. Don't you want to make America great again no more? What, are you some sort of Hitler-y supporter? Huh? Hey, cognitive dissonance. And for all we knew, if those other 48% started voting, they'd vote just as stupidly.
And they'd vote to deny climate change. And they'd vote to make sure that people get on the Supreme Court who have no business being there. They'd vote to kill Meals on Wheels. Eliminate funding at the CDC. Sure. And because with all that mandatory voting in Australia, the same sort of thing happened. You wind up with a right-wing government who call themselves liberals. It's always so confusing down there. Up there. Up and down are relative in space. So we'll just give the Australians the privilege of being up there this evening. That kind of makes the South Pole the North Pole, and being how the North Pole doesn't have any ice anymore, well, why not? But they got mandatory voting there. And they got themselves a right-wing government that wants more Co. Thinks Co is their friend. Co keeps the lights on. I feel sorry for you. Angry Architect and Robert and John and all of our buddies in Australia, I feel sorry for you. Bruce Curry is a farmer. A farmer who grazes sheep? I don't know. Said, it's bloody-minded and barbaric. This is going to definitely impact on the integrity of the Great Artesian Basin. Because there's a lot of water there. In the Great Artesian Basin. And I guess water for Australian right-wingers still isn't nearly as precious as, you know, money. Here's the numbers. And by the way, thank you. Carol Baker. Barrier Reef? We love barriers here in Merca. Why do you hate freedom so much, Bob? I know. We're going to have us a barrier right there. And by the way, the lady, you hate to talk about such a thing, but I'll hire a lawyer. As if hiring a lawyer and hiring a prostitute are, right. Well, in some cases, there's more honor in hiring a prostitute, frankly. But she lives in a gated community with a golf course on it. And the general manager said, well, we'll lose 15 of our 18 holes on our golf course. Convert to putt-putt, asshole. Go vote for Trump some more. And they'll all be down there and there and see, they'll be behind the wall, which means when the hordes of Mexicans come across, they'll be defenseless. When the great 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 grandson of Pancho Villa comes riding up. Or maybe the great 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 grandson of Santa Ana. Who knows? Here's the dirties. I mean, so water. Just, we're talking about water here. Just let this percolate. See what I did? This one mine in Queensland is authorized to draw out 26 million liters of water per, anybody want to fill in the blank, day. Let's see. So a liter is a little more than a quart, but let's just round it to things that I can understand. So 26. That's like 6 million gallons plus a day. 6.5 million gallons a day. Because my metric system doesn't stick that good. Maybe 6.3 million gallons a day of clean, fresh,
pristine water.
Just ruin it. Meanwhile, a spokesperson for the Department of Natural Resources and Mines said, in granting this license, the Department of Natural Resources and Mines has carefully considered a broad range of information. Adani will also need to establish make-good agreements with groundwater users who could potentially be affected by changes to water availability or quality. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that we measured things this way, but I guess we do. According to the modeling for the mine, it will destroy 4.55 gigaliters of groundwater every year of its existence. Now, what kind of make-good arrangement do you have to replace 4.55 gigaliters of groundwater in a single year? Now, they did set up up there a Water Act referral panel whose purpose is the sustainable management of water in Queensland. Guess what? This license got grandfathered out of having to deal with that. And once again, they're making the industry is making the same old tired arguments. This is going to bring jabs. Lots and lots of jabs. Lots of tons of jabs. Everybody's going to have a $75,000 a year jab. And every $75,000 a year jab that we create is going to create several more $40,000 a year jabs. Mm-hmm. It's going to generate exports, bring jabs, more jabs to a depressed area of Queensland where they've run out of bananas to bend. Bananas. Yeah. And it's cleaner coal, right? Yeah. It's cleaner coal. It's going to replace the dirty coal that they're banning right now in India. I apologize. I don't get many opportunities to do my really, really bad Australian accent. And so when I've got an idiotic statement by an idiotic member of government, I'm going to give in to it. That dirty coal that it's going to replace in India? No. The thing with people who oppose coal mining is since they're doing it for free and they're not doing it for free, they're doing it trying to save their very lives. And they tend to learn the facts about what's going on. And here's the facts. Well, thank you, Angry Architect. Angry Architect writing from Australia says, I love your accent, mate. it's just good to have that kind of confirmation once in a while. No, it turns out the coal they're going to pull out of the Adani mine is shit coal. Just like the crappy stuff we blow away mountains to get at here in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I know our friends Jen and Graham are off over in toward Perthward. But this, I mean, what was the story from a couple of years back? The automated mining, the iron mine out Perth way, where all the trucks are run by some little dude 1,000 miles away. Yeah. All right, now we're going to get off and running on my Australian accent. Hoghead says, Bob, you're not trying hard enough. I can still understand you. Well, that's because I'm doing Australian, not Scots. So, no, it's crap coal. It's valuable only to the people who are digging it. And it will be done large. The machines, I saw these things years ago when I was in Germany. These great goddamn machines with these sawtoothed discs on, and they just grind away level by level by level. And making these giant goddamn pits. And it's not like it takes a whole, it's not like there's going to be a whole bunch of people just with picks and shovels digging a hole. No. And, of course, it also will constitute a carbon bomb, which in turn will further harm the Great Barrier Reef. And, meanwhile, in seeking comment for the article, Adani Mining was sought out. And they were, shall we say, less than forthcoming. By the way, and you know, hey, look, globalism. Adani Mining, for once, isn't even, it's not even an Australian concern. It's a wholly owned local subsidiary of an Indian company. So all of that area of Queensland in the Galilee Basin, on top of an artesian aquifer, tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of years in the making, is going to be ruined. And what they get is going to leave on boats and go not to China, but to India. Yeah, I understand. Robert says, I still like compulsory voting. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying that it doesn't necessarily solve any ills. And as Robert points out, it doesn't stop an elected government from doing stupid things and making commitments in the people's name that they don't want. Too many of our politicians are still stuck in the dig it up and sell it overseas mentality as a solution for everything. Well, think of it, Robert, as vestigial colonialism. I mean, Australia can't possibly be good for anything qua Australia itself. Australia's worth is only measured in terms of what it can mean to the wider world, which is a pity. Meanwhile, the angry architect says, is there any wonder that we haven't had a prime minister on either side since that dickhead Howard in 2007 that served their full term? Because we keep kicking their asses out. Maybe things will change. That is, until we get a prime minister with a goddamn spine. So this latest asshole will be the latest statistic in 2017. Now that I've moved to Canberra, I get to stick my middle finger up at the prime minister's residence every time I drive past. Makes me feel better. Then, you know, sometimes you just need that. Sometimes you just need to feel better. As far as this particular mine is concerned, Robert says, this whole business with the Adani Carmichael coal mine has been going on for a while now. I don't think I've mentioned it to you in previous emails. Yes, I remember. That's why when I saw this story today, my pink little ears perked up. People know, Robert says, it's insane. People are fighting back, but it's slow going. Well, remember, I mean, and hey, we don't win many here in Appalachia, so we know a little about it, about slow going. But just remember, first they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. You got to figure out where you are on that continuum. Robert continues, the Queensland government are doing the usual jobs, 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 and investment in Queensland's future bit, and we're getting a few cents on the dollar royalty to sell this horror to the people, as the once Great Barrier Reef slowly dies. It's all being pushed by a multinational company based in Ahmedabad, India, the Adani Group.
All this to make an Indian from India billionaire even more of a billionaire. Signed, Robert from Australia, the second driest continent on the planet. Oh, but there's water under the ground. So why not dig it up and throw it away and poison it? Because who needs it, right? Eventually, I don't know. I don't know how folks are there. Eventually, you'll get to the point where people are, if they haven't already, you know, chaining themselves to the machinery. Nonviolence does not mean passivity. That should be recalled. Meanwhile, Keith says, good day gone bad. Well, that's me, Bob Kincaid, little ray of fucking sunshine. Just as the day was ending on a fairly good note, things change. Sean has to come in and shit all over the good rug. When will people wise up? I'll make a contribution, not in the name of Sean, but just because it's important to keep the horn going. Thanks, Bob. Keith, P.S. Piss on Sean. Thank you. Thank you, Keith. I'm sorry about the rug. I know. Oh, Brown and Raleigh. Now you've done it with a bumper. Movie theme from 1968. Perfect bumper, in my honest, humble opinion. By the way, good to hear from Crocodile Kincaid. He goes on walkabout a little too often for my taste. We gotta laugh, okay? We got to. If we don't, we are, and what's the word I'm looking for here? Screwed. Thank you, Michael, for taking us down to 164. Note, on behalf of proud Sean from Wisconsin and the Russian ISP and or deadly brain-melting Wi-Fi connection he rode in on. Oh, goodness. You know, that's let me just throw this out there for general consideration. We can have disagreements. Don't be an asshole. If you're not an asshole on the front end, you won't get assholery thrown back at you. It's really quite that easy. So, you know. But what can I say? I'm proud of everyone, and I extend the admiration of we activists and we campaigners here in Appalachistan to those with the courage to stand up in Queensland and more broadly in the rest of Australia. I mean, my God, this mine's water usage is not subject to public submissions and appeals. In other words, it's going to operate as a law unto itself. The output of the Adani mine will dwarf New Acland's output of about 7.5 million tons a year. And nobody can say a word about it. Not a peep. Meanwhile, Carmel Flint is a campaigner for a group called Lock the Gate. She calls the license a free kick to take water from important aquifers such as the Dunda Beds and Clematis Sandstone formations, geologic water-bearing formations in the region. She said, this water is essential for farming communities. Without the water, the businesses are basically finished. And she runs 17, for instance, Mr. Curry, who is not running sheep, runs 17 head of cattle in a good season on a 25,000-hectare property, said if the Adani mine proceeds, a lot of the others will then go ahead and the groundwater will be done for. Now, meanwhile, how about a little bit in the way of statistics? Clarity. According to the UN minimum per capita need, the needs of 3/4 to 1.5 million people will be blown through every day. The water needs of 3/4 to 1.5 million people will be blown through every day by that godforsaken coal mine that no one needs. Has the sun stopped shining on India? Has the wind stopped blowing in India? Do rivers no longer flow in India? But the sad reality is that this is on a par with what has been predicted for some time now, and that is that global coal consumption will continue to rise on an aggregate global basis into the 2030s. Unless it is proactively curtailed. And so this particular decision, this particular mine in Australia, will have a net effect on people in India, and not a good way. It'll have a net effect on people in China. It'll have a net effect on people in goddamn Greenland. It'll have a net effect on people across the broad Eurasian continent. It'll have a net effect in Africa, South America, North America. Because we are at a point where every molecule of a hydrocarbon that is combusted has a net effect on every human being alive on the planet and the future of those as yet ungot and undreamt of. So when Mr. Curry in Queensland, who runs those 1,700 head of cattle, opposes that coal mine for reasons that are entirely local and personal and very real to Mr. Curry, he is standing in the breach for you. He's standing in the breach for me. He's standing in the breach for the hopes and dreams of the little species that could. But thus far had a pretty nice little run on the planet. 100,000 years or so. We certainly don't have the longevity of the dinosaurs. But my goodness, look what we did with it. Look at the big thoughts that we thought. Look at the dreams that we dreamed. And look at the fucks that we fucked. Well, it is Titanic Tuesday, isn't it? Now, since this is only a 2-hour program, I encourage you, if you wish to involve yourself in the conversation, to stand not upon the order of your calling, but call at once. You know the numbers, 304-663-4676. 304-574-8178. And from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Robert says, there's so much we could be doing in Australia that we don't. Solar panels on every roof in Australia would cancel the need for any new coal-powered power stations in Oz. The very first suggestion after that recent power failure business in South Australia. Solar farms, and not very big ones, in Central Australia could power the country. I think it was 50 square kilometers. Larger ones would enable Australia to sell power to Asia. All the above have been studied and are feasible. But try and convince some of those people of the land, you know, morons, politicians, we have that that's what we should be doing, and they have every excuse in the world. You just have to keep trying. Robert from Australia. Yeah, you don't get an alternative. Climb or die, baby. You can't ease your way back down the rock face. It don't work that way. Climb or die. Stay where you are. Die. Climb or die. You can't stop. So, you know, much admiration and much solidarity for and with the people with the courage to oppose these nightmare hell pits up there in Australia. Okay, so what was it, $164 to go in fundraising? Yeah. And we will take a little break. Let's see, it's Tuesday. Let me check here real quick. Do we have the... Yes, we have the Green News Report, courtesy of Brad Friedman, Desi Toyin, coming up. And, of course, your calls, your conversation, your ideas, your thoughts. And I certainly do look forward to hearing them. You know, as long as they don't start with, fuck you, Bob. Because that really does just sort of poison the well. Yeah, working with the water analogy again. Yeah. All right, 10 past the hour. This is the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Play, damn it. There we go. Maybe. From 1968.
Pour it on, Morris. Give it everything she's got.
Open the door, you'll find the secret. To find the answer is to keep it. Yeah.
It's Tuesday, April 4, 2017.
The wall of water so powerful, entire neighborhoods washed away.
Historic rains cause catastrophic, deadly flooding in Columbia. Flint, Michigan residents force state to begin replacing lead-tainted water lines. Blue states take on Trump over energy efficiency standards. Coal pollution linked to high risk of low birth weight babies. Plus,
we will put our miners back to work.
New data shows Arby's and car washes employ more people than the U.S. coal industry.
That's why we got to put them back to work. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
My administration is putting an end to the war on coal. Gonna have clean coal, really clean coal.
Yes, clean coal. I know clean coal sounds like an oxymoron, but so does President Trump.
Getting used to it yet? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I'm sure you're going to beat up on Donald Trump in a moment, as you do. But hey, on Monday, he donated his first salary check as president to the National Park Service. Would you like to apologize to the president now?
No, it was only $78,000.
Only? That's a lot of money.
The National Park Service's maintenance and operations backlog is $12 billion. And Trump wants to cut the whole department by $2
billion. Yeah, well, when you put it that way, maybe you got a point. What else do you have for us today?
Well, on a much more serious note, in Colombia, South America.
The streets of Mocoa, Colombia were consumed by a wall of water late Friday night. Heavy rain triggered the overflow of three rivers, and the flooding quickly turned into an avalanche of mud.
Torrential record rains overnight Saturday triggered catastrophic flash floods and mudslides in the city of Mocoa, a wall of water that officials say swept away entire neighborhoods while residents slept. As we go to air, at least 262 people are now confirmed dead, hundreds still missing. Colombia's president, Juan Manuel Santos, has declared a state of emergency, and he blamed the disaster on climate change, which scientists say is intensifying extreme weather events. Here in the U.S., the U.S. Senate this week is battling over the confirmation of Judge Neil Gorsuch to the U.S. Supreme Court. Environmental groups oppose elevating Gorsuch, warning that his record is to the right of the late Justice Antonin Scalia on environmental and climate regulations that rein in industrial pollution. Meanwhile, the struggling community of Flint, Michigan, will get 18,000 new water lines to begin replacing its lead-tainted water system. It's the result of a $100 million federal court settlement between the state of Michigan and a coalition of residents and environmental law groups who sued the state to force it to replace the water lines and continue delivering clean drinking water to residents.
About time, although it's going to take a number of years before all of those pipes can finally be replaced.
Which is why it's so important that the clean water deliveries continue. And environmental law groups are also mobilizing new lawsuits against the Trump administration's assault on public health. The Sierra Club and partner organizations have filed suit against President Trump's decision to approve a permit for the controversial Keystone XL pipeline from Canada on the grounds that Trump's sudden approval, reversing President Obama's prior rejection, violates the federal regulatory process. And 10 state attorneys general, with a coalition of environmental groups, are suing the Trump administration over its abrupt reversal of 6 proposed energy efficiency standards for a host of appliances, arguing it's a violation of federal law to arbitrarily delay standards that would save American homes and businesses an estimated $24 billion in energy costs.
And enough electricity to serve 36 million households annually.
Meanwhile, a new study links air pollution from coal-fired power plants to a higher risk of low birth weight babies. Scientists at the University of Pennsylvania found that women living downwind from a Pennsylvania coal-fired power plant had a much higher risk of having babies with low birth weight, less than 5.5 pounds at birth. That was compared to women living away from the plant's air pollution. The higher risk held true regardless of the mother's wealth or access to health care.
But of course, it is the less wealthy who
tend to live closer to those coal plants in the first place.
That's true. But this study showed that air pollution knows no city limits. Mm. Finally, a new report raises questions about Trump's fixation on the coal industry. A new Washington Post analysis of county employment data finds that even fast food restaurant chain Arby's employs more people than the entire U.S. coal mining industry. The car wash industry, the theme park industry, JCPenney, and Whole Foods each employ twice as many Americans as the entire coal mine industry. This data raises questions of why so much of U.S. energy policy is directed at just one highly polluting industry.
Follow the money. The fossil fuel money.
Indeed.
You got a lot of news into today's report. Nice going. For more on those stories and the ones Desi couldn't get in today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us and share us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Follow where the money goes. Follow where the money goes. Follow where the money goes.
19 past the hour, about 40 minutes left in this evening's truncated version of the horn, because we'll be knocking off at 8 p.m. You know, so that I can turn things around and get them all ready to roll for Malloy at 9. So, if you want to get involved in the conversation, this would be the time to jump in, and I highly encourage you so to do. Just a sec here. Okay, let's check in. Let's check in with Clarity, who provided us those minimum needs numbers on water a little bit ago. Good afternoon. It's afternoon there. It's evening here.
Hi.
There you are.
I don't know if I've talked to you about it before. I can't remember. I think I might have talked to when I called in the majority report. But people don't even realize that Oregon is, I think, third or fourth now in dairy production in the United States because of two big dairies. And there's one down the valley, but this two mega dairies. One in Morrow County and one just 10 miles downwind in Umatilla County. And this is all had been originally back in the day, desert claims.
Yeah, I was going to say, is this east or west of the mountains?
This is in the desert part.
Okay.
North central Oregon, mid-Columbia basin. About 40 miles south of Hanford, but on the Oregon northern border. Anyway, these two dairies are, both of them are just out of sight from Interstate 84. But they're huge, Bob. The one in Morrow County is the fourth largest dairy in the world.
Holy God.
And the one in Umatilla County that they just approved, and I sent you the link to the story about it, is going to be a little bit bigger than that. So
that'll make it the third largest in the world.
Yes, exactly.
And when we're talking about a dairy being the third or fourth largest in the world, Clarity, what are we talking about in terms of number of cattle in a confined, is this a fairly confined space? I understand it with dairy cattle, you kind of got to keep them in one place, right?
Yeah, it's basically they have the cows in the middle, and then they around the area they grow alfalfa, and some of it is recycled water. But the ironic thing is, while they were in production for the new dairy and building the infrastructure and the water systems and stuff that will go in, they plowed up a bunch of trees that they bought. See, this area was all in softwood trees for years, and somebody speculating on it. And when the market dropped out, they sold it, and they got this property, and they cut down the trees. Well, it's desert. And as soon as they cut down the trees, of course, it went back to sand, and they had problems with erosion. So they didn't really have a lot of water set up to go there. So what they were doing, Bob, was trucking cow piss from their other dairy 10 miles, 15 miles up the interstate and spraying it to keep the dust down.
Beautiful.
Yeah, okay. And the only reason I know about that is because my partner that I play music with has a construction supply business. And he was supplying some of the contractors out there on the site. And he said there was so much dust and it was so bad that one day he went to the construction site person and told him to shut it down before somebody got killed, because he almost drove into one of their ditches, which is about, 20 feet across and 10 feet deep. So anyway, they're going to produce between 2 and 3 million gallons of dairy waste a year.
It's got to go somewhere.
And this is, the thing is, it's ironic, or I don't know, maybe somebody knew what was coming up. But they just approved this aquifer recharge. See where my grandparents had a desert claim. They found water out there back in the late 50s. And they grew alfalfa, and then finally, when my uncle lost it to the banks, back in the 80s when everybody went bankrupt, he made some poor decisions and didn't play it right. He shouldn't have lost it, because the water rights were worth more than he got paid, when he sold off. But anyway, to make a long story longer, all these farmers, one by one, drained out the aquifer, and it went bankrupt. Well, as soon as they went bankrupt, these corporations came in and bought the land up that had been, for nothing. And then they got water rights to come in and pump water out of the Columbia.
Because they...
so they could farm. They had water, okay? And my grandmother fought that tooth and nail until the day she died. To keep that from happening, because it wasn't going to go to the local people. It was going to go to these multinational corporations.
Right.
And she knew it. And when it ended up, I told you about the trees, my uncle was the last person to sell, and he had trees on four sides of his half section. It's like he drove through these groves of softwoods, and then here's this clear spot, and that was my uncle's hay ranch.
Wow.
He was a stubborn son of a bitch. Anyway, it was just, the place where it's at now is about 7 or 8 miles as the crow flies, out in the middle of nowhere. But they decided that since nobody can see it, they'll be able to smell it. That's where they put it. And somebody, when they approved it last week, one of my good friends said, oh, this is, great, because we lost all those family wage jobs when the incinerator shut down. See, Hermiston's far enough from everything in the world that that's where they put the all the nerve gas.
Oh, beautiful. It just gets betterer and betterer.
Yeah, well, they just finished incinerating that. They finished it up just after I moved back in 2009. And then they decommissioned, and all those jobs went gone. And it took them, about 10 or 12 years to burn it all up. I have a friend that's a chemist, and she said that the spray and stuff they put on the crops around here is a lot more dangerous than was ever coming out of that smokestack because it was so regulated. But the ag business isn't hardly regulated or observed at all.
And you know, generally speaking, and this is a perception problem, Clarity. On the one hand, you know, my friends in northern Wisconsin are actively involved in fighting a CAFO, you know, confined animal feeding operation, and those are disgusting, and you know, cattle stand up to their knees in their own feces, and then they kill them, and then we eat them. Okay, not you, but I mean, you know what I mean. They go into the stream of commerce.
Yeah. Well, the thing is too.
But that's eaten cattle.
Yeah.
People have a different set of perceptions about dairy cattle. It's somehow warmer or fuzzier. But that doesn't really apply when you're talking about a dairy the size of what you're describing.
Yeah, well, and you know, in the EU, 100 cattle is the limit to one in confinement because it causes acid rain downwind from the nitrogen release.
I have no doubt about that.
No, it's been proven.
Yeah,
which will be good.
Let's be clear. Let's be clear. These cattle at these massive dairy operations, these aren't massive, organic, free-range, cruelty-free, non-GMO, no bovine growth hormone operations, are they?
Well, you know, I'm not sure, but...
Because it's kind of hard to run an operation that size without using industrial-strength chemistry to keep it going.
Oh yeah, as far as keeping the herd healthy and stuff, yeah, exactly. They have a full-time vet that's on the site there. I had a friend of my mother's who did her internship there from Oregon State as a vet, and she said that you can't abuse cows; they won't produce as much milk, and it's pretty much automated. A lot of it, you know, they just walk in, they have carousels. They walk in, they just hook them up, and they, you know, they're used to it. They're kind of, it's designed that way for high production. But what I wanted to say is also that my older brother worked there on the first dairy when it was getting set up, and he was injured working there, and he had, you know, a lawsuit that he lost, and when he went to court, the list of defendants, the major owner of that dairy was a Korean conglomerate, and everybody in Oregon around here thinks it's Tillamook Cheese, and Tillamook Cheese has a great reputation and name, but it's just the name. It's, you know, like Haagen-Dazs now, you know, it's just a name.
Right. It's
and
might as well call it neoliberal cheese.
Yeah.
The word has lost meaning.
The thing is, you go to the store and you could always get cheese. Well, around here, I guess because we're close, but you can get cheese for a 2-pound block for usually under $5 someplace. They've got it on special. And you can't even. How can you produce that? That's not even physically, chemically credible that you could produce that much protein for $2 a pound of cheese.
I mean,
think about it.
Whenever I say that to somebody, they say, "Well, you know, that's the miracle of volume marketing."
No, that's where the GMO stuff comes in, because they're feeding them a blood meal and stuff like that. And that's where I worry about
cow nibbles.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it could be the whole ground up cow, just like, 100% beef at McDonald's. You don't know if there's spinal column stuff in there. And I've read a couple studies that it's, you know, it's past.
Well, no, that's how you get, that's how you get mad cow.
Yeah.
A cow eats some mad cow, and because the prions aren't, I mean, it's not a virus, it's not a bacterium, it's this otherworldly thing, and,
well,
you know, you're not, it's proof positive against cannibalism. But, you know, the chicken farmers do the same thing because they've got, you know, they got this chicken waste. So, you know, they feed chicken to chicken and they feed cattle and chicken to cattle. And it's, I guess it's great for the bottom line. And, you know, when you go and sit down with your banker or whatever, but it's not good within the life cycle of the animals or the animals that eat the animals. Including us animals. Well, I mean, not you, but...
It's like that film, The Yes Men. Have you ever seen that where they...
Oh, yeah.
Say that, you know, that's what it reminds me of. When they have the layers, I've actually read studies where they layered the animals and the layer animals below them would eat what dropped through the slats.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are meat-eating animals. Pigs. Us. Sharks.
Yeah.
I read a story, Agnes shared it with me last night. Apparently, before a dolphin eats an octopus, the dolphin beats the shit out of the octopus.
Tenderizes it.
And so, I mean, no, it's becoming, I mean, dolphins will rape otters and hold them under the water until they drown and just rape the stuffing out of them.
You mean kind of like Abu Ghraib?
Well, with dolphins going, but they're so cute, the dolphins. But it turns out that the dolphins are like you know, everybody's like, ah, fucking sharks. No, the dolphins are the thugs of the ocean. And maybe that's why we feel such a kinship with them, because that's that's very human behavior, you know.
Well, we do use our big brains for. The wrong things, as Matthew Fox likes to say, you know, that PhDs are doing more harm to the planet than, you know, the working man ever thought of even a man just doing. You know, what we do with our ingenuity is wrong.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's that big brain thing again. What are you going to do with the big brain? For the majority of the time that this species has been on the planet, we have used our brains for hunting and gathering skills.
And to keep from getting eaten.
Right, and it's only in the last 7 years that we've used our big brains for things like sedentary behavior. And you know, even that word is a bit of a misnomer because it makes it sound like somehow somebody in the Fertile Crescent or over in Mesopotamia was flinging barley grains out from a goddamn rocking chair. But no... But it's, you know, it's where you settle down, you build cities, and, you know, if we last long enough, I've begun to wonder, Clarity, if we're going to reach this point where we realize that, like, city dwelling is not such a great idea, because, of course, it's in city dwelling and animal husbandry, especially on the Eurasian continent, where we developed most of the diseases that have, or most of the diseases evolved and adapted to the human species that have bedeviled us for the last 5,000 years.
Well, and as suburbia creeps into farming areas, where you've got drift from bovine and, you know, livestock, that stuff can be airborne.
Oh, and sure. I mean, that's where it all comes from. Human beings living in close proximity to their domesticated animals.
Well, and when I grew up, we had a feedlot right on the edge of town, and we would get a brown fog that would just roll in. But some of the locals, they said, oh, that smells like money.
Oh, I know.
Well, it smells like cow shit. It smells like cow shit, sir.
And it was the same thing on an industrial basis. It was the same thing. When the wind would blow in the wrong direction from the paper mill over in Cortland, Alabama, and I experienced the same thing down in Tuscaloosa, you know, the University of Alabama has a lovely campus. But you wake up some mornings and you're just covered up in paper mill, and it is not a happy smell. It's not a pleasant thing.
No. Lewiston, Washington, Lewiston, Idaho, the Twin Cities there, on the Snake. That's a V-shaped valley, and yeah, they had inversions there from their pulp mill that were deadly.
Yeah. And so, using our big brains for the right thing, using our big brains for the wrong thing. I mean, you know, most of us who are progressives and humanists, we hold a great degree of not reverence, but admiration for, say, Charles Darwin, right?
Well, he was in the right place at the right time, I got to say.
And he came up with the right ideas. One of the things that people don't know. Okay, so the little town near which I live is named for an English geologist. He never came over here, but he identified what would be the presence of massive coal beds under the ground where I live. And in the course of his work, he borrowed money from Charles Darwin. Because we have correspondence in Darwin's papers of Darwin writing to him saying, "I say, old chum, when are you ever going to pay me back that money I lent you? And there's no response. I don't think there's any response correspondence of him saying, checks in the mail, Chuck." So indirectly, Charles Darwin, whom we secular humanists admire, is partially financially responsible for the explosion of disaster that has been 130 years of the coal industry where I live. Thanks, Chuck. The law of unintended consequences.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and you know, the old saying, the road to you know where is paid with good intentions.
Yeah, and sometimes just curiosity, because that was the era of British colonialism, when they had figured out some rudimentary fundamentals of geology and geography, and they started applying it all over the country or all over the world, and ostensibly for purposes of scientific understanding. But all of those lords and vicomtes and who-nots and majestic noble graciousnesses would never have gotten behind these schemes if they didn't think there was a quid or two to be made out of it. And so you wind up with the resource extraction colony that is Appalachia, that is probably to this day, the wealth of which is probably still contributing to the well-being of people with hyphens on their names, with big ears and buggy eyes, and who are a member of the upper class twit segment of British society.
Yes, and something I didn't realize is that during the industrialist period, a lot of the money that was made in the 19th century was taken back to Europe and reinvested, and there was a second layer of wealth that was created from the United States that went back to Europe, but, you know, kind of basically went into the same companies, but their children that had started the companies in the South, and the shipping and the timber and then oil.
Yeah.
But like the history of North America, as you know, the ships got better. They started, you know, in Newfoundland, and they burned up all the trees, and they moved into New England. They burned up all trees and moved west, and there was no soil in New England, so they had to go someplace if they wanted to grow crops. So you know, the United States has been a story of let's we point fingers to the slash and burn mentality, but you know, this country's always been, well, there's some more left somewhere.
I think George Carlin once described the expansion across the North American continent. And he said it's all just one big football game. Second down in Pennsylvania, Midwest to go.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of truth in that.
Well, you know, and that's what we should be. You know, I think it's far enough in our history. We should be able to teach it now to our kids. You know that the Howard Zinn people's history of the United States is probably more true than the corporate version. The Harvard,
right, which is why right wing governments in the various right wing states do things like passing laws to make sure that the name Howard Zinn is not even allowed to be spoken in a public classroom.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've seen those stories.
Yeah, well, and did you know that the last Bill Hicks, his last thing that got censored.
Him.
Yes, indeed. He was a great mystic. In his own way, was that he talked about Heather has two mommies and Daddy has a guest. And he didn't say anything, but he inferred that he preferred, you know, the homoerotic thing of the lesbian, you know, Heather has two mommies. And then he kind of made a gesture about, you know, I don't think I like Daddy has a guest, you know. You know, kind of homophobic thing, but they censored it because you can't have gay jokes, you know?
Well, Letterman censored his last appearance on Letterman based on a moment of prophecy. You know, it was a long time ago that our buddy, Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, began saying Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, because he is a prophet. His last segment that got censored from Letterman, which Letterman later apologized for, was censored because well before reality television became a thing, Bill Hicks stepped on stage and said, I just want to let everybody know I've finally gotten a TV gig, and the audience cheered. And he said, it's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be comedy. There's going to be suspense. And he said the name of the program is Let's Hunt and Kill Billy Ray Cyrus.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
And that was just that was unacceptable. But he said every week we'll have a new episode in which we hunt and kill Billy Ray Cyrus, because who wouldn't enjoy watching that?
Yeah.
And he may have inadvertently invented reality television. Amazing.
Well, or misery porn at the very least.
I don't know how miserable, really. I mean, Billy Ray Cyrus. We're talking about Billy Ray Cyrus, but you get my point. Well, Clarity, it has been a delightful conversation. It always is.
Well, thank you, and you know, I'll be here in Cowpiss Heaven, thinking of you on this Tuesday Titanic. I hope nobody drowns, you know, in a sea of cow urine anytime soon. I would also remark that since I have a reputation of being the crazy tranny on the bicycle, I'm a tomb, a tranny on mountain bike, and that somebody got ran over by a semi last night after dark.
Oh.
And everybody was, you know, checking on Facebook to see if it was me, and it's like, well, you think I'd respond if I wasn't, you know? Silly kids.
Yeah, that's the Twain thing. The rumors of my splatness have been greatly exaggerated.
Yeah, I can think of a couple of prime candidates. We've got a schizophrenic homeless guy that pushes around his big bags of cans and bottles and with two flat tires. And
because America.
You know. Oh yeah, because he's free to be his own man.
That's some freedom.
And nobody will represent him, you know, for Social Security. So there he goes.
Jesus. Jesus. Well, Clarity, have yourself a good evening. You take care.
You do. Keep the faith.
All right. Bye now. Calling from the wilds of eastern Oregon. That's Clarity. Now, dairy cattle get the warm fuzzy from us. So, yeah. Oh, good news. We are down from 164 to 139, courtesy of Keith. Thank you, Keith. Thank you. $139 to go in fundraising for the evening. We're chipping away at it as we run down these last 13 minutes of the program. A couple of notes coming in. Robert in Australia really enjoyed the green slime, courtesy of Ron in Raleigh. One of my favorite It's So Bad It's Good Japanese-American sci-fi movies from the late 1960s. I love the scene where the pilot can't reach the thruster control because the ship is accelerating at 10 Gs and the hero just stands up and walks over and does it because, you know, hero. Meanwhile, courtesy of Kitty in Boston, Abu Ghraib with dolphins, otter raping. Thanks for ruining dolphins, Bob. Just another side benefit of listening to the horn and Bob Kincaid, little ray of sunshine. Yes. Well, I mean, it ain't like I told him to do it. I mean, I love otters. Otter mating pairs asleep, when they go to sleep on the water at night, they go to sleep holding hands so they won't be separated by the rocking of the seas before they wake up the next morning. That's probably not true. It's probably just another goddamned internet lie. But isn't that romantic as hell? And then some dolphin pops up and... Actually, it's probably more like... And... I know. If it makes you feel any better, and it won't, they do the same thing to baby penguins. I don't know. If I'm the penguin, I'm thinking maybe I'll just take the shark treatment. Hey. And as of the old Warner Brothers cartoon notes, penguins is practically chickens. Where does this come from? Well, by God, we used to get little notes from Ron and Raleigh saying, today on the EIB network, you know, things you will never hear on right-wing radio, discussions of the sexual violence of dolphins today on the horn. You know, this is just a little reminder. If you ever have trouble getting the podcast from White Rose Society or Stitcher or TuneIn or whatever, I always also put it up at a site called podbean.com. PODBEAN.com. We pay a little bit of money every month to be able to do that. Just trying to create a wide swath of places where you can get the program. And of course, when you put it up, you tag it. You know, maybe Appalachia or healthcare or something like that. And I don't think I've got... I mean, when I go to put the Podbean up this evening, I mean, do I really want to create a tag that's called Dolphin Rape? Or Rapey Dolphins? Or no. But it's only fair, Kitty. I mean, it has to... It's in my head. And all we got in common is our misery. And the least we can do is share it. Meanwhile, courtesy of Michael in Madison. Stop telling dolphins how to rape, Bob! Jesus, that thing's got legs! Well, I mean, not where the dolphins are concerned, but you know what I mean. Oh. So, how do we knock down the last 9 minutes? Oh, how about this? I'm sure you, when I ran the Green News Report, I'm sure you heard Desi Doyen talking about this birth defect study. You know, this thing kind of, I see these, more and more of these studies are coming out now. Statistical analyses of areas where, of you know, health impacts of things like coal, burning coal. And it all kind of begins with the groundbreaking work at West Virginia University of Dr. Michael Hendricks. He's the one who did the birth defect study on 10 years of live births here and found that the nearer you live to mountaintop removal, the more likely it is that you, baby, are going to be born with birth defects. And in this case, the New Jersey study was 52,000 full-term births between 2004 and 2010. In four counties immediately downwind from a former coal-fired power plant that has been shut down called the Portland Generating Station in Pennsylvania. The EPA, the job-killing EPA, identified Portland Generating Station as the sole reason why sulfur dioxide levels in the area exceeded EPA standards. It closed 3 years ago, but that left, with that number, 2004 to 2010, a rich field of data to be examined. So guess what? Having only examined the birth weight of full-term successful pregnancies, they found out that low birth weight was much more likely in the communities that were downwind of this coal-fired power plant. And among other things, what happens to babies with low birth weight is that they tend to die more often. They also tend to, if they live, be prone to diabetes, heart disease, and high blood pressure. So, naturally, Scott Pruitt, back when he was Attorney General of Oklahoma, challenged the cross-state air pollution rule promulgated by the EPA, because I think, because job-killing regulations. And so, if and of course, part of the poisons that coal-fired power plants put into the air are in the form not just of sulfur dioxide, but of particulate matter. So if you've got a particulate problem, even if it isn't involving a coal-burning power plant, it comes with significant long-term nightmares. And imagine a place like West Virginia that relies almost entirely on filthy, antiquated, coal-fired power plants. If you saw the movie The Last Mountain, there's one scene of a fiend of coal standing in front of the coal-fired power plant that supplies my electricity, saying, "This is a state-of-the-art facility!" Followed immediately by the fact that that state-of-the-art facility was not state-of-the-art, is woefully behind the times, has been cited for numerous violations, and is in fact a danger to the people who live around it. Okay, on the way out the door, Asa tells me that the dolphin rape myth may be exactly that, a myth. Justin Gregg says, Google the term dolphin rape and you'll find countless references to male dolphins raping female dolphins, males raping other males, gang rape, and even dolphins raping humans. You might even find the hoax webpage claiming that dolphins regularly kidnap swimmers and take them to a rape cave. But over at Google Scholar, there are no references to dolphin rape in the scientific peer-reviewed literature. This is because dolphins are incapable of rape. You can't use that term, Justin Gregg says, to describe the kinds of behavior scientists have observed in dolphins. Well, I think we're splitting a few hairs here, Asa. The central problem is the legal definitions of rape include a lack of consent on the part of the victim, and we simply cannot know the extent to which dolphins or other mammals are able to give consent. So really, this guy is pinning his argument on the notion that we don't know that the penguin didn't dress that way for a reason. We don't know that the otter wasn't asking for it. So what shall we call it? Interspecies sexual violence? That's not shaky ground. That's hair splitting, Asa. Meanwhile, Jack in Shreveport pointing out, it's no longer allowed to label cans as thug-safe tuna, is it? No. Oh, God. Yeah, it kind of makes you... Well, you're getting a little of your own... No. Just took another one off the street there, Henry. God knows. Titanic Tuesday. It's a mixed bag. It really, really is. So we'll close the program out this evening. What did I say? 139 bucks to go in fundraising. Thank you very kindly for the in memoriam Sean contributions, who will never listen to the horn again. Because, you know, Jill Stein is so wonderful. Thanks for those. Very helpful. And we'll take another run at it for prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow evening. In the meantime, I'm going to shut down here for an hour and then get ready to fire things up for the Malloy program. It'll run, you know, these three more days. It'll run on the Horn Stream as well as over on Progressive Voices. And, gosh, I hope you'll be there for all the fun and carrying on. Let's try, shall we? Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to each and every one of you who helped keep the program going. Thanks to all of you who spend your precious finite time engaged in this conversation, as silly as it can sometimes become. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve from Georgistan. Thank you. To our news ninjas, thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. See you in a little bit.